Second reason that claim preclusion does not apply is because this case involves different claims and a different subject matter from the 2008 case. In determining whether there is identity of claims and subject matter, this court should follow the rule that every other court that has addressed this issue has followed, that an unsuccessful attempt to acquire property for a public purpose does not preclude a subsequent action as long as the court is satisfied that the subsequent action was brought in good faith and there has been a change of circumstances so that the action is not merely an attempt to relitigate identical issues.
Counsel, but isn't the property that we're dealing with this second time around exactly the same property that was at issue in that earlier case?
Yeah, the property is not exactly the same property. Greeley removed from the easements that are at issue a right of entry across adjoining land owned by Mr. Snyder. And that is in Exhibits A and B to the petition in condemnation. So if the court compares Exhibits A and B to the petition in this case and Exhibits A and B to the petition in the 2008 case, they are different. In addition, the district court found that the property is substantially different in this case than in the 2008 case, and that finding is entitled to deference. Although that was a statement that was in the order on summary judgment, that finding was incorporated into both the order granting immediate possession and the final rule and order in this case. The immediate possession order occurred after a hearing at which the court took testimony and on the reasons why Greeley changed the rights that were being taken in this case. And therefore, the court's finding that the easements at issue are substantially different are entitled to deference by this court.
Mr. Rax, assuming we, just for the sake of argument, that we thought there was no substantial difference in the property or the identity of the property, would a subsequent ordinance be enough of a change of circumstance?
Well, yes, a subsequent ordinance would be enough of a change in circumstance because the fact of the existence of the ordinance. The ordinance didn't exist at the time of the 2008 case. And in fact, this is a similar situation to the case out of Illinois where the city had attempted to condemn property and was not allowed to amend the property. The taking was held to be excessive. The city was not allowed to amend its petition because it did not have an ordinance authorizing the taking of the lesser property. And the Illinois Court of Appeals stated that as a result, once the city went back and passed a new ordinance authorizing the taking of new property, that was a new circumstance that distinguished that case from the prior.
Does our record tell us why the city didn't just act by ordinance in the first instance?
I would look to the prior orders of the district court and the Court of Appeals. The city of Greeley did not believe that its charter required it to act by ordinance before the prior case. It had not been previously litigated. The city's interpretation of its charter was that a resolution was sufficient, and that had been its practice up until that date. That practice has now changed.
Mr. X, to return to a question asked you earlier by Judge Graham, if in this case the city had again tried to proceed by way of resolution rather than ordinance, would you agree that you would have been precluded from doing that?
Yes.
So for you, the difference, the ordinance rather than the resolution, is sufficient for you to say that you have a different subject matter here.
That's correct, and the difference is that the passage of the ordinance is itself the changed circumstance that makes this case different.
Does anything in the prior district court order or this court's order, I mean, I've read both, but I just want to make sure I'm understanding them correctly, does anything in either of those order in any way, shape, or form adjudicate that the city can't act by ordinance?
In fact, the district court order states that the city must act by ordinance. Um, Moving on to the separation of powers and prohibition of retrospective legislation. And the basic principle is that if the prior judgment did not preclude Greeley's subsequent condemnation, there is no taking of an order. And so the constitutional argument is subsumed into the res judicata argument. Restrictions on police power and the legislative power of Greeley don't really have any application here because Greeley is exercising its condemnation power in this case. It is not attempting to regulate Mr. Snyder's property. It is taking property, and in this case, sought to have the amount of compensation for that taking determined. In addition, Mr. Snyder overstates the right that vested in the prior judgment by claiming that Greeley essentially is forever barred from condemning his property for any reason. The district court's characterization of the nature of his property right was exactly correct, which is that he had a right to insist that Greeley pass an ordinance before it condemned his property. Finally, Mr. Snyder fails to state any way in which the mere passage of Greeley's ordinance impairs any right. There is no taking in this state without judicial action. Therefore, the ordinance cannot be illegally retrospective. To summarize, Greeley is implementing the orders of the courts in this case, not attempting to abrogate them. The district court in this court said that Greeley's charter requires it to pass an ordinance before it can pass easements, and it did so. And so, therefore, this court should reject Mr. Snyder's request to forever bar Greeley from exercising its eminent domain power to construct a public facility across his property. Thank you.
Mr. Axe.
Briefly, I refer you, if you would, just by way of notation, to the opening brief at page 18, where our Supreme Court says in People versus TKB, the property right that it describes is, I quote now, legal exemption from the demand of another. In the next case I cite there is Green versus Chaffee Ditch Company, an old ditch company case that the court said, and I quote, when a judgment establishes the law of the case, it becomes a rule of property as to the subject matter of the suit and passes with it to all persons subsequently claiming under such parties. So that's the nature of the property right. What you just heard from Greeley's counsel is, yeah, that's a nice description, all right, but we can, by way of an ordinance, take that right away. Well, they didn't attempt to condemn that right. They abrogated the effect of it. The U.S. Supreme Court said in the Plout case that not even Congress can take away by its subsequent legislation the lawful effect of a prior judgment of a U.S. District Court. We relied on that in the trial court. We rely on it here. It's been briefed. It's been ignored by the trial court. Trial judge didn't pay any attention to it. But nevertheless, our Supreme Court says that you got to follow the Plout case in Colorado. As a matter of fact, this court also says you got to follow Plout in Colorado. That's the background, that's the framework for the analyses that you should be looking at. As regards last point, as regards this business about we're going to vastly different condemnation action right now, this is a 30-acre parcel. They took a strip through it. In the initial condemnation, they said, we not only want the strip through it, but we want the unfettered right of access across the remainder of the 30 acres. They dropped that unfettered right to access across the remainder of the 30 acres.
Thank you, Mr. Schroeder. Thank you, Mr. Axe, Mr. Schroeder. Both of you had excellent arguments. They were illuminating and helpful to us. Thanks very much. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.